Yes, she'll join us.
Okay.
But in the meantime, let me say a few words of introduction. In this particular edition that we're going to use in Mitzvah Shem, and I'll try to explain what the greatness is of this edition of the Meshach Chochma of Rameir Simcha Mitvinsk, we have what's called Pirkei Mavo. And actually, Pirkei Mavo, let me just tell you how many pages there are here in this volume. I'm just going to close the door so I can hear myself think. It is 74 pages. So basically, we have a book here which is called Pirkei Mavo, and the author of this book called Pirkei Mavo is Rav Kuperman.
Sorry.
Rabbi Yehuda Kuperman. Zichron Levrach. I mean, he passed away, I think, less than a year ago.
Right.
And I can't dedicate 1 hour a week to the Pirkei Mavo. I mean, that itself would take us, I don't know how long, a year maybe, I don't know. And let me just finish my introduction. Okay, just give me a minute and I'll be right with you. In this introduction, he not only focuses our attention on the Meshach Chochma, but he puts the Meshach Chochma into a broader context. And he goes back to the earlier Mefarshim, especially the Ramban's commentary on the Torah, and then he fast forwards to the Rabbeinu Avadya and the Ksav Kabbalah, and he basically tries to show that there's a thread here that perhaps reaches its apex in the Meshach Chochma of interpreting the Torah based on what's called Pshuto Shel Mikra. And what he gets from Pshuto Shel Mikra is an amazing conclusions. For example, he has an entire chapter here. I made a note of it. It's chapter 4. And please, if you could write this down to remind me, because I do want to come back time and time again to these two chapters that I want to single out. Chapter 4, which is on page 17, page Yud Zayin, is entitled Pshuto Shel Mikra Kimakar Lechidush Halacha. That means that we can derive halachos from the simple understanding of the Mikra. Now, this principle that we can derive halacha is something that makes the Meshach Chochma very, very unique. We're not going to see that tonight. Tonight we're going to cover the Meshach Chochma, not all of it, but most of the Meshach Chochma on Parshas Bereishis. There's nothing halacha in that particular area that we're going to study tonight. But what he proves in this chapter, which as I said before is the fourth chapter in his introduction, is that time and time again the Meshach Chochma will derive halachos from the Mikra, from Pshuto Shel Mikra. Now, as I said before, one of the great commentaries before the Meshach Chochma was the Ksav Kabbalah. He was probably 100 years before the Meshach Chochma. His name was Mechelberg, I think.
Mecklenburg.
And he writes in his introduction, "Ein anu rashayim lechadesh b'mitzvah pirush." We don't have a right to come up with new halachas and new interpretations of a pasuk that's not based on Chazal. And in the Pirkei Mavo, he tries to reconcile the entire shita, the whole approach of Rav Meir Simcha Mitvinsk in his Meshach Chochma, with that statement, that principle of the Ksav Kabbalah. As I said, we'd have to go through this with a fine-tooth comb. Now, if you fast forward another 17 pages to Perek Vav, of Pirkei Mavo, that's on page Chof Zion. So he writes the following, that Sefer Breishis, again, not Parshas Breishis, but Sefer Breishis, is a makar, is a source for the Meshech Chachma, for Limud Halacha. And this is also very, what word am I, very tenuous, if you will, very radical or revolutionary. It has to be understood because Chazal say over and over again that Breishis is the story, is the Sipurei Dvarim B'Alma. It's full of stories. And Nidna Torah v'Nischad Shalocha, and Halocha evolves with Har Sinai and beyond, but not before Har Sinai. So how could the Meshech Chachma over and over again derive Halochos from Sefer Breishis? He has a whole list here. Again, in each case, he goes into detail about how the Meshech Chachma was able to derive halachos. And very often, the Meshech Chachma will derive halachic conclusions from the context in which a mitzvah the Torah is brought. In other words, the mitzvah really belongs here, and instead it appears here. And to the Meshech Chachma, that's going to have to shed a light on new halachas. Again, I'll just mention very... I'm committing suicide here by even mentioning this, because you can ask me 1,000 questions which I'm not prepared to answer, but this is for myself, so don't listen. In Zvachin, there's halacha of Shechita B'Tzafon, and that applies both to Kachim Kachim and Kachim Kalim as well. So it's not just in an Ola, but it also applies in Shlomin. That's called Tzafon. So the Azor is made up of different parts, but the Shechita has to be done in the northern part of the Azor. Now, there are situations in which the animal is partially in and partially out. And when the Torah speaks about Tzafon in the context of Korban Ola, so it differentiates between Tzon and Bakar. And the Meshech Chachma derives conclusions that with regard to Tzon, you need 90% inside the Tzafon, but with regard to Bakar, you don't need 90%, all you need is Rov. Again, these are very complicated halachas here, but he derives it from the way the Torah formulates these dinim, and nowhere do we have any source for this. So, you know, the question is how does the Meshech Chachma evolve this shita that based on Pshuto Shel Mikra, we can be Medayik Diyukim, and we can come to conclusions. We can come to conclusions even before Matan Torah at our Sinai, and those conclusions will be effective even today, even though Breishis is considered Sipur Dvar B'Alma. These are some of the issues that he approaches, but the main Holy of Holies here is called Pshuto Shel Mikra. So without further ado, I would like to place the Pirkei Mavo on the back burners. We'll be referring to the Pirkei Mavo if this experiment succeeds time and time again. But what you have in front of you is the Meshech Chachma's commentary on Breishis. And you should know that all of Breishis in the Meshech Chachma is approximately 12 pages long. I've given you, I think, 4 out of 12. So this is a very good sampling of the Meshech Chachma on Breishis. Now, one thing that I find a little disturbing is that in the print of the Meshech Chachma, there is no Chumash. And I look, we have here in the yeshiva, we have 2 different printings of the Meshech Chachma. Neither of them have the text of the Torah on top. So you really need, if you're learning Meshech Chachma, especially because he's so medayik in the Pshuto Shel Mikra, you have to have a Chumash in front of you. So I open the Chumash here. Now in this other edition, which doesn't have Rav Kuperman, and all the Meshech Chachma is in one volume, Rav Kuperman has it spread out into 3 volumes, which means that 2/3 of the Meshech Chachma, as he published it, are his own footnotes. In this volume, what they do is every new paragraph where he starts a commentary of the Meshech Chachma, they at least quote that pasuk in its total. Why Rav Kupa didn't do so is beyond me. You know, if I could write a letter to his son, you know, it's, that they should have at least printed the pasuk itself, which they do in this particular edition of the Meshech Chacham. Now, a few words about the Meshech Chacham himself. He was a great halachist, and perhaps his magnum opus in halacha is the Ar Sameach, which is a commentary on the Rambam. And one of the things that's exciting for me personally today is that we're going to see his commentary on Breishis reflects one of his chidushim in the Ar Sameach al Rambam.
What does he do there? He goes through all the Rambam?
No. It's only a commentary on selected Rambams where he has a kasha or this machlokas, the Rambam and the Raivin, and he wants to put the machlokas into perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Also, again, it's full of diyukim. He's very, very sensitive to the language of the Rambam. And he lived in the city of Dvinsk. Now, again, if you get a map, you will not find the city of Dvinsk on a map. It's called Dagopol, so maybe I'm not pronouncing it the way the Russians pronounce it, but it's in Lithuania. And when I was sent to my wife and I were sent to the Soviet Union of then, we met a young man who had two photographs from the city of Dvinsk. One was a photograph of the Rogachev, and the other was a photograph of Ramir Simcha. His hasmada was legendary. I mean, they say about Ramir Simcha that he would climb a ladder to reach a sefer, and this was, let's say, the evening. He wouldn't come down from the ladder until the next day when he finished the sefer from cover to cover. I mean, different amazing stories about Ramir Simcha and his hasmada. But what we're going to focus on is not Rav Meir Simcha as a masmid, but rather Rav Meir Simcha as a machadish, and his creative analysis of, in this case, the Torah itself. He also wrote chidushim on Shas. Those are less popular, you know, less commonly used, but it's, you know, they quoted extensively as well. He lived approximately a century ago. I would say he died, I'm not exactly sure, they probably have it here in the introduction, somewhere around the time that Chafetz Chaim died in the 1930s. Maybe he lived a little bit beyond the Chafetz Chaim. So we're talking about someone who's, in a sense, very contemporary, but he lived in a world of his own. You know, he lived in a Torah world. He was not, like you talk about Reb Chaim Ozumi Grzinski, who was a contemporary of his, who lived in the world of Jewish life. You know, he was very much involved in all the major movements that were going on in Jewish life. The Meshech Chacham was much more...
1926.
Oh, he died in 26. I thought he lived a little bit longer.
1843
to 1926. So let's read the Pasuk in Perek Aleph that describes the creation of man. Now, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, which is the last section before the creation of man, God turns to the Aretz, and Vayomer Elokim, Tadshe Haaretz Deshe, Esev Mazria Zera. So tonight we're not going to focus on that part of the Pasuk, but Eitz Pri Ose Pri. And Chazal say that Eitz Pri Ose Pri is a reference to two different categories of trees. One is a tree that's Ose Pri, and there's another tree that not only is it Ose Pri, but it's Eitz Pri, which means that the bark of the tree is also considered a pri. And Tam Eitzo Ketam Pirio, which Chazal says a reference to the Esrog tree. We're going to see that Rav Meir Simcha makes a big, big deal about this, because he identifies the Eitz Hadas as the Esrog tree, according to one Man D'Yomer, and he very much roots for that Man D'Yomer. Now, we're going to fast forward to the creation of man, and it says, Vayivra Elokim es ha'adam b'tzalmo. And Rabbi Simcha is going to focus on a number of issues here. First of all, the most fundamental issue is, what does b'tzalmo mean? What is tzelem? What is the tzelem of God? What does that mean? That's going to be his major focal point. Then he's going to ask, what is Elokim? Why the name of God as Elokim? Then he's going to focus on the fact that at the end of every single day of creation, with the exception of the creation of man, it says in the Torah, Vayar, he saw Elokim, Ki Tov. That doesn't appear at the end of the creation of man. There will be a general statement about all of creation, and that's in Pasuk Lamed Aleph. It says, Vayar Elokim es kol asher asav hinei tov miyod. But with regard to the creation of man specifically, it doesn't mention that God saw Tov, and he's going to see if he can come up with an explanation for that. Now, in the very next pasuk, God commands man, "Pru revu milu'as ha'aretz." So, a lot of what's going on here in the creation of man is the male-female relationship, which is going to be expanded upon in the second chapter, when Hashem says, "Lo tov heyos li adam levado, eselo ezer kenegdo," and Rabbi Meir Simcha is going to try to understand what that means. What's this Ezer Kenegdo? Hatzelem, what is Tzelem? Hu habchira hachafshit, freedom of choice. In other words, all of the universe, with only two exceptions, are controlled, are dictated by cause and effect. And there's no room for freedom of choice. The two exceptions are the Ribbono Shel Olam, God, the divine being. He's totally free. There are no laws of nature that control God. And man. B'li teva machriach. Nature, teva, by definition, is a law, which means that all of nature operates according to law. Hence we have science. The study of science is the study of law. Not law in the ethical sense, but in the biological, physical sense. The laws of chemistry, perhaps the underlying law is really mathematics. And teva is machriach. When there's a cause, there's going to be an effect. That's undeniable. There's no change. There is something called Nes, miracle, but that's not being addressed here in this context. So what makes man similar to God, asks Rabbi Simcha, when you say that God created man b'tzalmo? What is Tzelem Elokim? And in a sense, he's asking, what separates man from all of creation? It makes him unique and singular. And the answer is, he has Bechirach of shit, something that's exclusively the possession of God, of Almighty God. Man is granted a godlike possession or propensity called freedom of choice. Rak miratzon v'seichel chofshi. He has freedom of will and freedom of intellect, meaning man is original, both in terms of his will, which I think refers to the world of action, and seichel, the world of thought. I would make a big deal about the fact that Rabbi Simcha uses both terminologies, ratzon and seichel. In a sense, he's defining two different areas of human behavior which come under freedom, and that is man's ability to will. Again, sometimes that will coincide with the divine will. Sometimes it will clash with the divine will. And so too man has freedom of thought, which would mean that man is responsible for his thought, and you could never predict human thought, because human thought is creative. It's like, if you will, yesh me'ayin. It's not a result of causality. But now, Rav Meir Simcha is troubled by the with a capital H, the objection, the philosophical objection to freedom of will. And that is yediyasa, that God knows exactly what man is going to decide. Now, it's part of our belief in God that God knows not only the past and the present, but He also knows the future. So God at any point can predict human behavior. Now, it's also part of our belief that God, insofar as He's perfect, could never be guilty of falsehood. God is truth. So therefore, if we put these two principles together, God knows the future of man, and number two, whatever God knows is emes, then by definition, man cannot be free. We can already predict his behavior without a shadow of a doubt. So again, on the one hand, man is free in the sense that he's not subject to cause and effect like Teva. But on the other hand, there's another machriach. There's another element, another variable in the equation that will cause man to be forced and compelled to act in a certain way. And that is the fact that even before he makes that decision and he acts in that way, it's already written in stone, it's already predictable that he's going to decide X, or he's going to do what? So how do we reconcile God's knowledge of man and the future decisions of man and actions of man with freedom of choice? So here, Rav Meir Simcha quotes the Rambam. And as I said at the outset, Rav Meir Simcha wrote an entire work on the Rambam. We're studying his work on Chumash, on the Torah. But the Rambam is perhaps the Rebbe of Rav Meir Simcha, in the sense that all of the influence into, or the molding of his of Rav Meir Simcha's way of thinking is from the Rambam.
Am I allowed to say one thing?
Sure.
All right. So I grappled with this idea, if you were chafshit versus God knowing what we're going to do. If you take a kid who's just learning how to walk, and you know he's going to fall, but so because you are the parent, so you have that knowledge. You don't prevent the child from deciding whether or not he's going to crawl up and down the stairs or not, and even though you know he's going to have a mishap. So that doesn't preclude your ability of bichira chofshis, just because someone else knows.
Okay, that's one solution to the problem.
I
don't know if anybody could predict exactly at what point the child is going to fall. You know, in the case of God's knowledge, you know, every single detail is already
radiator.
Is already predetermined.
He's touching the radiator. You know he's going to scream. It's hot.
Oh, that's because man is a biological being. You're right. In the biological world, man is like, it's like any part of the universe. Man will react biologically based on the law of nature, no less. We're talking about man as an ethical being. Martin?
I also believe that there's no contradiction between God, between you having a complete bichira chofshit and God knowing which way you're going to decide. He happens to know which way you're going to decide. That doesn't change that you had the choice of which way to decide. He just,
but the only problem, Murray, is that God knows this before I get to the choice.
That's because he doesn't live in the, God does not exist in the, in the time frame.
Oh, excellent. That's a good answer.
We exist in a frame of time, past, present, future.
Right. You're right, Murray.
God exists outside that frame, and therefore he can see what we're going to do.
The classic answer to this problem is not the Rambam's answer, but your answer. And that was the general accepted answer, that God's knowledge of the future is only because God lives in all time time zones, time dimensions.
Outside the time.
Correct.
The concept of time. He doesn't have a past, present, and future.
Rameir Simcha, based on the Rambam, and by the way, if you want to find the Rambam for me, I'll give you the Rambam here. I think I have it on the desk. I'll tell you where to open it. You'll have to help me out here. And the Rambam is in the fifth parak of Hilchos Tshuva. And the Rambam says that the answer to this question is not to reinterpret Bechirach of Shit in such a way that you can reconcile Bechirach of Shit with man's, with God's foreknowledge, but rather the answer lies in understanding God's knowledge. And he writes the following.
I have the first parak here.
Yeah, just give me a minute. I'll call on you in just a minute. But let me just get to Rebbeinu Simcha before we get to the Rambam. He says, Hine, yidi also, the knowledge of God, eina machras, does not force man's choice. Ki ein yidi also ba'a nosefes. Which I think means the following. That when you talk about yidia, about knowledge, knowledge itself is a result. That's called nosefes. Nosefes means it's external. I know something because I've encountered it, and therefore I have now assimilated that knowledge. I've encountered it either intellectually or physically in terms of my sense perception. That's yidia shel basar v'dam. That's knowledge in the human realm. That's always a product of something that's external to man. In the case of divine knowledge, he atzmuso, his yidia, is the same as his essence. It's not something external to God. It's not that God acquires knowledge the way a human being will acquire knowledge. He has a storehouse of knowledge. But rather, the knowledge of God is identical with the essence of God. So you take a look at footnote number 3, he refers to two different Rambams. One is the Rambam's introduction to Perek HaChelik, which is called the Shmona Prakim, and the other is the Rambam Silchas Tshuva. And in these places, the Rambam writes that the idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not the same as man's idea. So we use the word knowledge in both cases, but it's a borrowed term. It means two different, fundamentally different things. Now, if we could know God's idea, then we could know God's essence, and we would certainly understand and appreciate freedom of choice. But hine, unfortunately, ki ein b'yecholas banu, we don't have the potential, lahavin eich hi, what is the idea of God, his knowledge, because his knowledge is the same as what? As his essence. Ki ilu yidativ ha'isiv. Now, again, I need your help with this. If somebody could just open up, this is the standard edition of the Meshech Chachma. I'll give this to you. So you're looking in chapter 1, pasuk number 26. It's not open to that page, I don't think. Or if it is, it's a miracle of sorts. But does he have Ilu Yedativ HaYisiv? See if you can find that.
126.
Where in Bible, what am I looking at?
I don't see that.
You don't see those words at all?
Hold on.
It should be there.
Hold on.
It's a paragraph that starts with the words Hatzelem Eloki.
Okay, hold on. I was in Noah. Hatzelem Eloki. So what am I looking for?
So approximately, I would say about 6 lines into that paragraph, or 8 lines, we're looking for the words Ilu Yedativ HaYisiv.
Yeah, Ki Ilu Yedativ HaYisiv, yes.
Does he have it in what they call in Britain inverted commas, you know, in... No. So that's Rav Kuperman, I think, added that. That's just my hunch. Why did Rav Kuperman do such a thing? To add quotation marks?
Did Rav Kuperman write a I missed the beginning, I'm sorry.
On the Meshech Chochma. But I'm saying in the text itself, I didn't know that he tampered with the text, and he adds quotation marks to the text of the Meshech Chochma. What I think, again, I don't know if the anywhere in the Pirkei Mova I didn't see that he gives us, you know, some sort of rules. But I think the rule of thumb here, we'll see if that bears out, if this experiment succeeds, that Rav Kuperman will add quotation marks to tell us that the Meshech Chochma is not quoting a pasuk. He's coining a new phrase. And it sounds like a biblical verse. And he's saying, Eli Yadativ HaYisiv, if I would know God, then I would be God.
Unless that's from the Rambam that he's quoting. No.
So I don't know. Maybe you can do a word search in Bar Ilan, which and Bar Ilan includes the Rambam, and maybe you'll find it. I don't know. I think Rav Kuperman should have told us where he's quoting from. But the answer is he's deliberately putting it into quotation marks to tell you that he's not quoting it from anywhere. This is the original verse of the Meshech Chochma. It's like Rav Meir Simcha's poetry, so to speak. So we don't have the ability to know God. If we knew God, we would have to be God to know God, because the infinite separation, light years upon light years, infinite number of light years that separate man from God, makes it impossible for us to know God. And if we don't know God, we don't really understand the essence of His Yediyah, because that Yediyah, that knowledge of God, is one with the essence of God Himself.
In other words, there's no contradiction. With foreknowledges, it's beyond our comprehension. Is that
foreknowledge is so different than our concept of Yediyah,
right,
that there's no basis for this question. Well, how can we be granted freedom of choice if God has knowledge? But God's knowledge is God's essence, and we cannot know what that knowledge is. So, we think of knowledge and Yediyah in human terms, but when we're going to ask the question, well, what is God's Yediyah? We're going to start projecting our understanding of Yediyah onto God. It's not a valid enterprise, because God's Yediyah is so different in its very essence that it would not preclude man's freedom of choice. That's what he says in the next few words. Rak zos al yodim. What we do know is shal abchira chofshid hu mitzimtzum helokus. So we'll get back to that in just a minute. Any luck in finding the Rambam?
So
let me see if I can.
You can tell me what to look for in Parashat.
Yeah, the reason I didn't tell you is because he doesn't tell you.
There's only one and a half pages. It's only one and a half pages all there. So
I think this should be. No, this is the last Rambam in Parashat. This chapter in Hilchos Tshuva is dedicated to Bechirah Chofshit. And the Tshuva Just, the Rav has a whole discussion about why the Rambam injects this parakeet right in the middle of Hilchos Tshuva, but that's not for us now. He says, V'shem Tomar, after discussing freedom of choice for a whole chapter, he says, and if you'll ask Halo Kosh Boko, Yodea Koma Shiyah, Kodem Shiyah. God knows anything that's going to happen before it happens. But Yodea Shiyah Tzadik, in Russia.
Right.
He says, in Tomar, he says, if that be the case, then how could there be freedom of choice? Which again, as I said, is the subject of this whole chapter. So he says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu eini yodea b'deah shechutz mimenu, God's knowledge is not external to him. Ki bnei adam shehein v'daitam shnayim, that they and their, meaning they, their essence and their knowledge, are two different entities. Elohu Yisbarach Shmo, V'daitam Echad. God and His knowledge are one. V'ein daito shel Adam yecholo lahasig davar zel birio. Man is not equipped with the ability to understand what God's knowledge is all about. and he quotes the pasuk "Ki lo yirani ha'adam v'chai," which is very similar to what the Rabbi Simcha had said, and this is Moshe Rabbeinu, that Hashem says that, you know, hareni noas kodecha, whatever it says there, and God, and Kitisra, and God says, man cannot know me.
We just read this.
Yeah, in Kitisa, is kach ein kach the other lahasig velimtzo daito shel bore. He cannot in any way perceive or comprehend the das of Hakadosh Baruch Hu, and that's what the Navi says, which you also read recently on some gedal. Ki lo machshavo sai machshavo seichem. So God's thoughts are part of His very essence. We can't imagine what God's thoughts are. Well, this might touch, by the way, on the... I don't know if you're familiar with the terminology that God is represents the Yitzur Pashut, meaning everything else in the universe besides God is a compound, is made up of different elements. God is a simplistic structure, a simplistic element. There's no parts. You can't cut God into parts. It's one of the Yud Gimel Ikrim of the Rambam. Avol Neda below Suffolk, we have to know Shemaisa Adam Yada Adam, the man is granted freedom of choice. Ena Kodesh Baruch Hu Moshcho below Gozer Olav Lo Lasos Kain, or Lasos Kain, or Shelo Lasos Kain, and that's the Rambam. The Ravid goes ballistic on this Rambam, and he writes Omer Avram Lo Noag Zeh Machaber Minik Hachamim. This is not the way a wise person should write. She'ein adam maskil b'davar, a person should not ask a question, v'lo yeda lashlimo, he has no clue how to answer it, because at the end of the day he's going to have to say, well, we don't understand God's knowledge, that's not really an answer to the question. V'hu, and the Rambam, heichel b'she'elos u'b'kushos, and at the end, hechziro lanu l'amuna, v'tov hoya shelo laniach, shelo laniach, Hadover b'tmimus hatmimim v'imkein lo le'orer leva v'yaniach daito b'sofe. He says, you know, we created
more of a problem.
Yeah, he created more problems than he solved, because at the end we have simple faith in God and in the belief in freedom of choice. That's what we feel intuitively, that man has freedom of choice. And now by asking this question, he's going to at the end of the day say that we have to believe that God and His knowledge are one, and if we don't have any concept of and any recognition or comprehension of God's knowledge, and therefore there's no kasha. But at the end, he's saying, "Neida b'lo sofek shemai saw to be de adam." So that's really a munah pshuta. So this is not the right minog to ask a question, and then after disturbing my munah pshuta, to come full swing and say that the answer to the question is a munah pshuta. So why don't you leave it, as it were, with Emuna Pshuta?
The other issue with this approach is that if we say we don't understand anything about God, so then we also don't understand the other attributes of God. And then what does it mean to, you know, Ve'alach b'drachav and all these other issues that we're like learning about God and the ways of God? But if the answer is always we don't understand anything about it, so then that like shuts the door on anything that we can speak of when we speak of Hashem.
So I think the distinction here is between what we call intellectual and ethical. You know, if you're asking me intellectually, do I understand God and His attributes, the answer is no. But if you ask me ethically, can I imitate His attributes, the answer is yes. In other words, I can see that God repeats a certain behavior pattern, and sometimes the Torah will actually define that and describe that. And the benefit that we get out of describing God and giving God attributes is that we know what decisions we have to make in life, and we have to imitate God ethically.
We're saying we don't,
but do we understand them? No, we never understand them, but we have to imitate them.
One could argue that just as we don't understand what it means when we speak of the idea, the knowledge of God, we also don't know what it means when we're talking about the Rahmanas of God, or the anger of God, or
I don't think so. I disagree with you on that point. Okay, we'll debate that on a different occasion. I definitely think we have to imitate God.
No, I agree, but I'm saying this approach.
But intellectually, do I understand exactly why or how? You know, that's a different issue.
But it's not
here. We have an intellectual issue. How could I possibly justify freedom of choice if God knows? Okay, let's again. I do want to learn the Meshech Chochmah. So give me a few minutes. Because again, I want to train myself, and I hope you're on board with me to train yourself as to how to read the Meshech Chochmah and appreciate his language. And here he introduces a new concept. He says, Tzimtzum Elokus. Now this was a pella to me, because my exposure to the concept of Tzimtzum Elokus has to do with creation itself. He's applying it in a whole different way. Tzimtzum means that whenever God constricts himself, not only in terms of the space in which he creates the universe, but also in the space that he gives to man to make ethical decisions, here too God is restricting himself. What it means is that God is going to take his yediyah and he's going to withdraw, so to speak, or shall I say contract his yediyah in such a way that he leaves room for man to make his own decisions. And he spells it out in the next sentence. He says, Shashem Yisbarach meniach makom lebruav. God is leaving space for creation. Lasos kefi mashi yivcharu, to allow them to make a choice. So in other words, it's not just that God created man, but he also created freedom. Freedom itself is a creation of God. And that creation of God required God to be mitzamtzem his elokus. And this is very important for the Meshech Chochmah, because as I said at the outset, one of the questions that he wants to address is why God is creating man with the name Elohim. And the name Elohim is going to be indicative of Tzimtzum, as we'll see. He says, V'sholal mimif'alehem ha'gzera. He rejected, or negated, I would say, from their territory of action, from all of man's ability to act, gzera vehachlota bepratis. Now, notice that the Meshech Chochmah uses a double language here. Number one, gzera, and number two, hachlota, and he adds the word pratis over here. I think what's going on here is that these two words parallel the two words that he began with in this paragraph about Ratzon v'Seichel Chofshi, that freedom is granted to man in two different dimensions. Number one, in will, which helps him make his decision and implement the action. And number two, Seichel, in his creative thinking. Man is not controlled or determined in a cause and effect relationship of law, of natural law, in terms of what thoughts he's going to think. He has freedom to think whatever thoughts he wants to think. So there's gzera. Gzera refers to the realm of action, which is determined by not the gzera of Hashem, but rather the ratzon of the man. Man has freedom of ratzon. And hachlota, which means his decision-making process in the intellectual realm, and seichel, is also chofshi. But why does Rav Meir Simcha add the word bepratius? And I think what he's adding here is that our view, says Rav Meir Simcha, of the principle of freedom of choice is a very extreme view. And I think he's coming lafuke, he's coming to exclude certain Rishonim who held that freedom of choice is very limited. It's not that every decision I make or every action I implement is a result of freedom. For some Rishonim, 90% of my life, I'm just using that number, don't quote me on it, is determined. It's only a very small area in which I am granted freedom of choice. Most of my decisions are made by a result of cause and effect. Comes along Rav Meir Simcha and he says, V'sholal mimif'aleihem bipratius. Pratius means down to every minute detail. There is nothing in the world of will and action, or in the world, the realm of decision, which is controlled, which is determined. V'lachem, Omar. Now again, Rav Kuperman adds quotation marks. According to Berzon, it's just a theory of mine, we'll see if it holds water, Rav Kuperman does this in order to tell you that this is not a pasuk. So if anybody would volunteer to win, you have Bar Ilan.
I don't have it.
Well, you don't have Bar Ilan. Huh. So then I can't ask you to volunteer. So I'll have to do it myself, but I don't know when I'll have time for this. But if you would do a word search for the next five words, I don't think it appears anywhere.
Right.
And Rabbi Simcha is saying Omar El Libo. Now there is a pasuk that at the end of Parshas Bereishis, at the time of the Mabul, when God decides to destroy the world, there it says Vayisatzev El Libo. He gets very sad, but I don't think it says Omar El Libo Nasa Adam Mitzam. Read the pasuk. The pasuk says Vayomer Elokim Nasa Adam Mitzalmenu. It doesn't say Vayashem Omar El Libo. But Rav Meir Simcha is addressing the following question. It says Vayomer Elokim, and then it says Nase. Obviously, God is addressing something or someone because He says Nase, let us make man. And Rashi and the Ramban, they say that He's addressing either the universe or He's addressing
the angels.
No, says Rav Meir Simcha, He's addressing Himself. And that's called Libo. Vayomer El Libo. God is talking to His Lev. The two of us should make that decision. Now, what does that mean? God and His Lev are not two separate entities because God is perfect simplicity. He's oneness. Pirush. Shatora medaberes beloshon bnei Adam. Meaning that just like you would talk to yourself, let's say you have one part of your being is purely intellectual, decision-making. The other part is your emotional dimension. So you would say that you consulted, so to speak, with your emotions or your intuitions, and you came to the conclusion that it's worthwhile to create man. So the pasuk uses human terminology. And if you take a look in the footnote, he tells you this is a Gemara in Brachos called Dibur Torah B'Loshon B'nei Adam. And I knew Dibur Torah B'Loshon B'nei Adam. I didn't know it was in Brachos Daf Pei Aleph, but in any event, Vayomer Elokim El Libo is a human terminology. Ki'ilu mityaetzim atzmo. He's consulting with himself. And this is going to become very important for Meir Simcha, because later God is going to get angry, so to speak, disappointed at his Libo. The pasuk says, Vayisatzev El Libo, I made a mistake. And he's going to blame his lave, so to speak, in human terms, for making that decision to create man. It was a futile, aborted experiment. Yeah, failed experiment.
The very fact that God speaks words is also just an attempt to put it into human terms. Because I don't think God actually speaks words.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I agree with you, Murray, about that. You'll have to.
It's just an attempt to say.
You'll have to.
We would speak words to do.
You'll have to convince me. But because, you know, Ado Arishon, and he's going to make a big deal, he hears the Kol Hashem.
God interacts with Adam through words, but interacting with himself, I don't necessarily.
Oh, I misunderstood you. Okay.
Now
I'm glad you clarified
himself.
That. Yeah.
It's not necessarily that,
Right.
That he has
right,
to,
right. He doesn't have to enunciate words to his heart so that his heart
right.
hears.
We're
the
just
words.
Putting it into human
Excellent.
Terms because
yeah.
that's how we
That's human
it.
Terms.
That's what
right.
we know. Of course, God
Sha'amar,
is
Sha'amar, in other words, God is addressing himself, and he's saying, Naniach Mokum Lubchiris Adam. Let's not use natural law and causality to determine man's actions. Leave room for freedom. Shaloye, and again a double language. Look at the double language. I don't know why he doesn't point this out. Muchrach b'mifalav u'mechuyav b'machshavosav. So again, and there's no difference here in my mind between muchrach and mechuyav. That's just poetic license. But mifalav are actions, and machshavosav are thoughts. Ratzon and seichel. So again, there's a double territory, or two dimensions of freedom. One is in action, and the other is in thought. And then he says, "Via bechirei chafshi lasos tov orak asher yachbots nafsha." Now, I think here we're going to see that Rav Meir Simcha believes that bechira chafshis. And it's revolution, so to speak. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as we said, had to create Bechira Chofshis by being by activating a midah of tzimtzum elokus is specifically with regard to ra, man's ability to choose evil. As far as man's ability to choose good, well, that fulfills and reflects the fulfillment of the will of God. It wouldn't be so tragic or revolutionary if man were to imitate God or fulfill God's will as a matter of nature, so to speak. That's the nature of man. Mm-hmm. But for man to do evil basically means that man is undermining the divine will. God wants man to do good, and now man is doing evil. That's amazing. That means that God is allowing man to undermine God's own decision, his own purpose or agenda. And that's the extent of this revolutionary idea of Bechira Chofshis, that God is mitzamtzem himself, allowing man to do evil and undermine the very will of God.
Sounds like in the next line it's the opposite.
You're ahead of me. I just wanted to, only because I'm going according to a certain seder, kasha yachbots nafsho. Do you see those three words?
Mm-hmm.
These are very important words. I think what Rabbi Simcha is pointing out is that the freedom of choice of man lies not in the totality of man's being. It lies specifically in his nefesh. The nefesh is the spiritual / ethical element of man. So God creates man not just as a physical being, like the Medrash describes how God gathers together the offer from all four corners of the earth, and he makes a golem out of man, and then he gives features to man and gidim and atzamos and organs and so forth and so on. But rather, we're talking about a different dimension of creation. God creates a nefesh. And that's what the pasuk says, and I think he's anticipating this pasuk. Nefesh chaya. In other words, God describes his creation of man as nefesh chaya. Vayihi ha'adam lenefesh chaya. Alright, now Rabbi Goldschneider points out the next line. V'yuchal lasos dvarim neged mizgei tivo. The neged ayosher b'ani Hashem. Again, a double language in Rav Meir Simcha. Number one, and here neged mizgei tivo. If I were writing a footnote, I would quote Viktor Frankl. Do you remember him? He was the psychologist after the Shoah, right? In which he pointed out that man could overcome his very nature. And that's mind-boggling, and this is a tremendous controversy between what they call the existentialist psychologists and the natural psychologists. To this very day, they're still battling. You know, the natural psychologists claim that man cannot go beyond a certain level. You know, he can never go against his own nature. That's impossible. That's why I always tell my students that studying psychology, you know, a lot of yeshiva guys, when they go to college, they study psychology. Many of them become psychologists. It's a dangerous business. They have to know, if they know up front and they're trained to know where psychology conflicts with Torah, then they're forewarned and they could, because it seems to me, and I think I know someone who really went off the derech because of this, because ultimately psychology tries to make human ethics into a science, which means that man is predetermined, just like all of the natural universe is predetermined. Notice that the natural cause and effect relationship that applies to all of material being applies to man even in the ethical realm. And that's what psychology is. So we can put a rat in a cage and we can determine human behavior and predict human behavior based on the rat in the cage. But forget about the rat in the cage. All I'm just trying to say is that if we experiment enough and we study human behavior, we're going to come to the conclusion that human behavior is a science. And if you convert human behavior to a science, you become an apikoros, because you're going to ultimately deny freedom of choice. So you have to be careful when you study psychology. That's what I think he's pointing out here. The yochal lasos dvarim neged mizgei ateva. In other words, you can tell me that under certain situations, man will definitely be submissive and he would not rise up against his attackers and his adversaries and so forth and so on. And I'm going to tell you, says Rav Meir Simcha, that man has freedom of choice that extends even to undermine or vitiate the laws of his very nature in terms of of an ethical decision that rises above his meze. And here I think he adds another element into the equation. V'neged ha'yosher v'nei Hashem. There's a certain purpose and an agenda that God has in this universe, and man can upset that agenda. That can only be a result of Tzimtzum Elokis. V'lachein medaber b'loshon rabin. Why is it that the pasuk says Vayivra Elokim Vayomer Elokim Nasa Adam? Nasa Adam is in the plural. So again, Rashi has his pshat, the Ramban has his pshat. According to Rav Meir Simcha, the Nasa Adam is this concept of Omar Alibo, which again is not in the pasuk, but that's the way Rav Meir Simcha wants to interpret the pasuk, that it's an Omar Alibo, that's the Nasa in the plural. It's God deciding together with his lev. Then he goes on to say that the word Elokim or Elokus, and again I would ask you if you have that version that I gave you of the Meshech Chochma, does it say there Lashon Elo with a hey over there or a kuf? Because in my print it has a dollar.
That looks like that's a mistake.
Ross, can I borrow that for a minute? Then I'll give it right back. I'll forget it. It's too complicated. So in any event,
that looks like a printing mistake. Yeah.
Yeah, it should say. That's why I want to double check here. Close the book. Why would you close the book? Okay, fine. So in any event, it says here, Asher lo Elokim krovim elov. Why is it that the word Elokim, which is the name of God, is written in the plural? And he says, V'chein lashon marus. Marus means control or domination.
Yeah, it's
Elokus. He has a kuf probably because he doesn't want to have a hay, right?
Actually, it's a hay.
Oh, he has a hay. Okay, that's what I would have written, a hay, but maybe he's afraid of Gneza, you know.
Maybe.
Yeah, he doesn't want to write it.
I don't
know.
It's like a mistake.
I think it's just a mistake in the print. So why is it that Lashon Marus is always God's divinity in the plural? And the answer is that God has control over nature.
What does Lashon Marus mean?
Marus means control.
Okay.
Authority.
Okay.
Domination. All these words, I think, are reflective of the concept of Marus. And Marus is the specific name of Elokim. Elokim means Baal HaKolchos Kulam. This I know from the Nefesh HaChaim of Reb Chaim Volozhin, who came way before Reb Meir Simcha. That the name Elokus, which appears exclusively over and over again as the name of God in creation, means that God is the source, the origin of all these powers, these natural powers in the universe. And therefore the name Elokus is really the most dangerous area from the perspective of man's challenge in faith, because if God is in control and he dominates and he's the source of all these powers in the universe, then how am I granted freedom of choice? I'm also controlled by God. And therefore God as Elokim controls man, and therefore defines Nasa Adam Etzalmenu, meaning gives man Tzelem Elokim, to indicate that don't think that my Marus extends to the ethical realm, but rather you have Tzelem Elokim. And that's what, if you turn to page Dalit, I don't want to interrupt. If you have to go to Meiriv, so go to Meiriv. I dabbed already.
I did Meiriv also.
So he says that's what the Medrash says in the name of Rav Ami Omar, when it says that God declared Nasa Adam, is Belibo Nimlach. He consulted with his own lev. And this is what justifies Rav Meir Simcha by saying that Vayomer means Vayomer El Libo.
Where on page Dalet are you right now?
The first line on page Dalet, Vizel Kamvonas Raboseinu Bamedrash. He quotes a Medrash Rabbah. You'll look in the footnote number 13, tells you where to find the Medrash Rabbah. And Rabbi Ami is quoted as saying that Omar, the word Omar means Belibo Nimlach. And Rav Ami says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu consulted with his heart. And Mashal, he gives a whole complicated Mashal that an architect creates plans, and with these architectural plans, he designs a beautiful palace, which is called a palterid. And then, after he designs it and creates it, he looks at it and he's disappointed. I was hoping for something much better. So who does he complain to? He has to register a complaint. And it says, Al mi yesh l'sraim, against who is he complaint? Lo la adrichal, he can only complain against the architect, but he himself is the architect. Heavy, meaning from this we can understand, vayisatzev el libo, which is a pasuk at the beginning of Parshas Noach, when God realizes that man completely failed, right? Ki hishkas kol basar, is vayitzasev el libo. In a sense, libo is the architect. Any decision to make man was a decision of God's lave, and now vayitzasev, he gets upset and disappointed with his lave, because who can the architect blame except for himself? Okay, we'll stop here. And if you get a chance, because I don't see that we'll meet again before Shabbos, you have to take this piece that we did today and attach it to the piece that is on the other side of this, or on the other column on this very same page. Dal, you see the second column, he has Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayar, and it's interesting that after every single day of creation, God looks, Vayar, And he declares Vehine Tov. After the creation of man on the sixth day, it doesn't say Vayar. In the next chapter, it says, in the next section, I should say, it says that God looked at the entire creation as Kol Asher Asah, and then it says Vehine Tov Ma'or. But as far as man as a creation, it never says Vayar. And the Meshech Chochma says that this is an emphasis on man's Tzelem Elokim as freedom of choice, because the word Vayar means when you see something based on nature, it's what you see is what you get, and that's final, and that's absolute. V'chein yeh li olam, on the second line on page Hey, if you want to underline that. V'chein yeh li olam. Whenever it says vayar, and you observe and behold nature, that's the way it's going to be forever and ever.
We don't have page Hey, but whatever.
Oh, I didn't photocopy page Hey?
I want to see here.
Well, it's there, Murray. Oh, see okay. If you can take it. You see those two piles? One pile has Gimel and Dalet, and the other pile has Hay and Vav. Let's see if you can find page Hay.
Okay, I got it.
So if you have Hay, take a look on the second line on page Hay, and you'll see the words Vechein Yeli Olam. Do you have those three words?
Yes.
So you want to underline those three words. He's saying that whenever it says Vayar, it means to behold a phenomenon in nature which is controlled by the laws of causality. Vechein Yeli Olam, the laws of causality never change. But it will be Adam, it couldn't say Vayar, because that would imply that man never changes. He's predictable and he's determined. There is no such thing as an absolute teva. Again, as a biological being, like you say, he touches a hot thing, he'll definitely move his hand back. But man in the ethical realm is always dependent upon his bechira, his freedom of choice, which is mischalefes. It's not predictable and it's not determined. And re'iyah, you can't say that I saw man and I know exactly what he is. He's always tov, ayar ki tovu. You know, nature you can describe as tov in an absolute way, but you can't say that about man, because b'chiraso mischalefes, and there's no hechrech, and there's no predetermination. So Meir Simcha really sews together many answers to many different questions in Pshuto Shel Mikra, based on the concept, the principle, and the premise that selem equals b'chira chofshes. Okay, then, so I wish everyone...